This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. A fingerprint, some tips, cell phone data, questioning of individuals who noticed a change in the personality of a 28-year-old, Ahmed Khan Rahami, after a visit to Afghanistan. And Rahami was the man captured yesterday in Linden, New Jersey, in connection with a series of bombings across New York City metro area over the weekend. City officials emphasized that the investigation remains active. According to reports, Rahami is a U.S. citizen of Afghan descent, born in Afghanistan. He was not on any terror watch list, but he was swiftly apprehended, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said, due to some classic by-the-book police work.
Our people handled this crisis from moment one with strength and resilience. And it was so impressive that people were back to business yesterday and today. In addition, of course, the president offered his congratulations to our first responders for all they had done.
New York Mayor de Blasio at a news conference yesterday. So what do we know here? And maybe more importantly, what don't we know? Karen Greenberg is director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. Welcome, Karen.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dawn Scalise is the government global business director at Thomson Reuters. She's a career CIA officer and a member of BEN's Business Executives for National Security. Dawn, welcome to you.
Hello, I'm happy to join you.
So what's your gut, both of you, on this case here? Great job, but do we need to find out a lot more before we can draw any conclusions, Karen?
Well, we do need to find out more before we can draw conclusions. The gut reaction is, I think, what the mayor said, which is that law enforcement and intelligence agents tracked this down very quickly, seemed to know exactly what they were doing. The larger question is, did he act alone, and what's coming in the future? What does this have to do with a larger plan, if anything? And that's what – this is the first individual from an ISIS attack in this country that's been apprehended alive. So we actually – law enforcement can actually ask him questions and find these things out and see what else is coming or who else was involved.
Dawn, your impressions?
I think I agree largely with what Karen said. Certainly, we have an expansive threat geographically across the country, and this obviously played out with the events this weekend in New York, New Jersey, as well as in Minnesota. I agree it's a little bit early to be able to draw conclusions about specific motivation, but certainly we saw clear acts of terrorism regardless of whether or not they were specifically directed or inspired from abroad. But certainly we're seeing increasing focus on these groups, really helping to inspire those to do acts of terrorism in place. And increasingly, we see those who are self-motivated and self-radicalized to act, unfortunately.
Now, what's the prosecutorial strategy in a case like this, Dawn? And Karen, you probably have a view on this as well. They've got him charged with attempted murder of officers. Now, can they just proceed with those charges and keep him in custody indefinitely? Or do they have to disclose any additional investigation associated with conspiracy, affiliation with ISIS, the results of interrogations that may lead various places in this national security realm? Could that all remain below board, or do they have to disclose all of it, Dawn?
You know, I'm not the specifics of how law enforcement, the FBI in particular, will approach this right now, but certainly they have clear grounds for indictment presently in terms of the threat he posed and the attempted attempts against the life of the law enforcement officers, even while, as Karen said, they can question him and try to learn more about whether or not he had any linkages to other individuals here domestically or abroad that provided specific direction or inspiration for the attacks. No doubt there's any number of strategies that law enforcement can pursue at this point in time. But it's clear that they're going to want the time to be able to get additional information so that they more fully understand, any support that he may have and the motivation behind the attempted attacks, and as well as, of course, the attack that occurred in Chelsea.
Karen, do those revelations unfold in public, or are they part of some secret investigation that we may never know about?
I think we're going to know about it. I think we're going to see federal terrorism charges. We're going to see a series of material support charges. Once they get their facts together, that's what they're going to want to charge him with. It's just a matter of time. They'll have a superseding indictment from this initial complaint. And we'll see what happens, whether he pleads or goes to trial.
Now, it was discussed yesterday that this was by the book police work, but I'm wondering if it's actually by the new book, in the sense that this is a post 9/11 example of interagency cooperation that these groups in the United States seem to be very practiced with, unlike what we've seen in Europe, where the interagency cooperation was non-existent. Karen?
Yeah, there's no doubt there's more interagency cooperation, but you can the NYPD and the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which have been working together very well, particularly of late, had their act together on this one. Let's also remember that these were smaller incidents than we might have expected and than were seen in Europe as well. This was Chelsea. This wasn't Times Square.
Right.
And part of that is a result of law enforcement having such a presence in the larger populated centers that it was in a more contained place. At least that's what I think. And so it's both strategy and cooperation.
Do you think this was a practice run for this fellow, Mr. Rahami, Don?
No, it's unclear, but certainly we see, you know, both with the incident with Rahami as well as with other incidents of late within the United States, certainly a focus on soft targets, targets that the perpetrator may know, understand that they can penetrate and operate in with ease. And so I think we're going to continue to see that. It's unclear whether or not this was specifically a dry run for perhaps a larger attack in a more iconic setting. But I think increasingly we're seeing attempts at softer targets just because they're certainly easier to carry out and perhaps with less scrutiny at the time.
So the main information that they're going to want from Rahami is what's the real target, right?
If there is such a thing, what they're going to want to know from him is who are his contacts? Was he in contact with anybody? Was he, as Don said, self-radicalized? Was he self-educated about how to build this bomb? What did all those trips to Pakistan mean? So they will want to know. But there has been no leakage in the press that this might have been a practice run. I would choose the interpretation that it's more terrorists trying to act where they can act and that the venues are becoming increasingly hard to choose. And so...
So let me turn this around to Don and Karen. This is a ragtag, you know, sort of hobby in the basement kind of pressure cooker crackpot who spends a lot of money on plane tickets to Pakistan. And, you know, to equate him as a huge national security threat to the United States is utter buffoonery and plays into ISIS's propaganda goals. Don, what would you say?
You know, I would say that even before ISIS, when you saw with al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and the instructions that they released some years back in Inspire magazine, instructions on how to put together pipe bombs and pressure cooker bombs and the like, and we saw this play out with the Tsarnaev brothers, certainly in Boston, there's an increased focus in enabling those who adhere to al-Qaeda or to ISIL's ideology to carry out attacks in their own backyard.
But are these jihadi Boy Scouts who are just sort of signing up for something that they saw online, or is it some organized army?
You know, I certainly wouldn't call it an organized army. Certainly, I think that the mantra almost now oftentimes is just to do it, to carry out attacks in areas where you live, using easy targets as well as weaponry that is easy to acquire or to put together, as in the case with these bombs. And certainly, Rahami did not show a great deal of skill in putting them together or in the placement of the bombs, but it could have gone far differently. So it's certainly not clear that he received any training to do this, but there certainly are training instructions and other types of instructions that are available through the web and through various terrorist websites and the like. So unfortunately, I think we're going to continue to see these kinds of attempts, whether or not they're highly successful or not.
Karen?
Yeah, I think that we have to draw a real distinction between Al-Qaeda and ISIS. It is possible that these ISIS individuals, type individuals, will morph into an organized command structure. But right now, that's not what we see. These are largely self-radicalized. There's 110 cases right now, prosecutions of ISIS-inspired individuals in the United States. And they are, it's sort of a passive inspiration. It often overlaps with some kind of personal agenda, personal disappointment, personal exclusion from society. So I think we're seeing something extremely different than Al-Qaeda. And I think the use of pressure cookers in this attempt to try to make people think that ISIS is more like Al-Qaeda than it actually is.
But pressure cooker bombs go back to the Anarchist's Cookbook in 1971, right? I mean, they've been used in France in the 2000s. Maoists used them in Kashmir. We've seen them in Greece. They've been in the Palestine and the occupied territories in Israel. Pressure cooker bombs have no identity with ISIS, as far as we can tell.
Absolutely not. But in this country, they do have an identity with the Boston bombing and with the only successful attack of that nature since 9/11. And so that is, I think that was the symbolicness of it. Also, pressure cooker. The materials that you can get for a pressure cooker, as you can find out online, are actually very simple, won't cause any alerts with law enforcement. They're not on an ATF list. They're only lethal when they are combined. They're only powerful when they're combined. And so all of these things, pressure cooker, the two pieces of the compound, all of these things are so easy to obtain. So
pressure cooker watch list. That's what's next here in the United States. Karen Greenberg is director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. Dawn Scalise is government global business director at Thomson Reuters. She's a career CIA officer and a member of the Business Executives for National Security. Dawn and Karen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.